Well, that's not even the issue anymore. It's now that people are just real gullible.
Bad songwriting. I was smoking strange when I met a penguin. Goddamn it, he was deranged. We were talking soccer, then it all fucking changed. I saw him press record and uploaded to his page. On that deranged penguin, for an Antarctic bird, he should talk fast. Oh, that deranged penguin, he made me an unwilling victim of his podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Deranged Penguin Podcast. Here in 2018, it's been a little under a year since Donnie Trump was president. Can you believe that?
That sucks.
Time flies.
I guess it's a good thing.
Almost done with. You know, like, we're not going to do this week in the decline of Western civilization here. I just wanted to point that out. It's January 17th as we're recording this right now. And we have a fun game to play.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Fun game is, let's talk about Sade.
Sex, baby.
No. Let's talk about Sade's, album, Promise. You guys ready to talk about this right now?
Totally.
We have to do it now, and we're not going to splice in any audio, because we want you to stay awake. I listened to this album, like, three times today. And it put my
Del's
kid to sleep twice. I will
it.
Say that.
So yesterday was actually her birthday, so this is very timely.
It is time. Look at
that's
that.
That's why I think, you know, Sade was holding us back from recording.
She was. It wasn't meant to be any sooner than today. Mm-hmm. She was born in 1959, and she just turned 59.
Oh, God. Everybody's sleeping.
I mean, it is good go-to-sleep music, but not because it's boring.
It's because it is not exciting. That's it.
It's because it's soothing. Have you heard of that word?
It has many things in common with Kenny G.
And now you're both talking mess.
That was not judgment. That was just...
All right. So
nobody
so we
ever used Kenny G
to Sade's
nobody ever did. You know it.
We listened to Sade's 1985 album Promise, and this is because Gina selected it.
I did. I put it on the list.
Yeah,
you're
we
welcome.
Did the wheel of selection, and
Adam put it into the randomizer that he built, and it came out
from scratch. 100 hours.
By
it took me
hand.
Hundreds of hours
to
build this
2 years to
randomizer.
And so it came out. And, all right, look. So, you know, we usually play the game, right? Any songs on here going into your all-time list?
What, you don't want any more history on the album or anything?
I mean, go ahead. You got history of the album. Go ahead. Why did you choose this album, Gina?
I like several of the songs from this album. And so I thought it would be good to listen to. I'd never listened to the entire album, so I had the opportunity to do that for this. Mm. It's the second studio album released by Sade, and
Sade.
It was released in 1985.
Yeah.
And that's all I wanted to... That's all
that
the
was
other
it.
Background I wanted to add. That
there was
it.
Nothing there. You didn't say anything.
And it's called Promise.
So, Gina, do you know anything about why she is considered a good popular artist?
I mean,
like, it's not like
when
I'm
I need
serious.
To scroll to the critical reception section. Is that
all
what
right,
we're
I
talking
mean,
about?
I don't. I think it's because her looks is like people think.
I think
things
that's
I've heard
one.
About Sade. Oh, yeah, she's so sexy. There's something about her voice.
I've heard of her. Like, I grew up hearing
about
her.
People say, like, she's sexy. That she's not the greatest singer, but she sings sexily. I guess. I mean, I don't know. I mean, she's not hideous, but I'm not.
I mean, if
I dream of Sade.
If you read the critical reception section on this
on Wikipedia,
album, on Wikipedia, they said that Anthony DeCurtis from the Rolling Stone magazine,
yeah,
said he felt that the careful Rolling elegance. Magazine. I know. I was like, I should have said the, so I had to.
The
end
magazine
with...
called the Rolling Stone.
The Rolling Stone.
Did this get sued by Rolling Stone magazine? Like, why are you using our name?
I hate everyone. So he said, the careful elegance of the production and instrumental settings seem little more than a strategy to conceal the limitations of Sade's vocal range and skills as a song stylist.
Yeah, I mean, we've all said this. Like, she hits a note, it's the same... Though she just hangs out in a yawn, and you know that's the end of it. And all of the songs on this album sound the same. I didn't know when it changed, which is kind of like
what
a theme.
Even
the
Green Day.
Ever.
It's like yeah. Seems to be a running theme in this.
Hey, most popular albums, all the songs are the same.
I guess, man.
Maybe there's a reason.
Yeah, I don't even like Jezebel. I could tell you the one when they're talking about like the Matador one, that was awful. I hated that song.
Yeah.
Matador. Shut up, Sade. I mean...
Do we have to talk about Tar Baby?
I mean, we can. I don't know. I didn't know what that song was about.
I don't understand either.
I can't
always understand
what
she's saying. I didn't read the lyrics of that song. I just was listening for them.
No.
She said something about her grandmother, and
it's a meaningful song.
Why is my baby being a tar baby? I didn't understand what that meant because my familiarity with that word is like a racial slur.
Yeah.
So I don't understand why she was saying someone was being that, like not being called that. I wasn't listening carefully enough.
There's a story of Br'er Rabbit and the Tar Baby, but I don't know much. Like I remember it from my childhood, but I don't know anything about the story.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess we'll have to do a little more research on that one.
But tar is also a euphemism for heroin, so.
There you go. She
Perhaps.
Is what, British?
Yes, she is. Since she was four.
So, I mean.
So, Gina, what are your favorite songs on this album?
My favorite songs. Is It a Crime? Let me go back to the track listing.
It's right here.
Oh, yeah. Well, things are in the way of looking at that. Jezebel, The Sweetest Taboo. But I would say, yeah, those are my top three. I'd say number one would be Is It a Crime? And then Jezebel.
Those songs are boring?
They just... I don't know. They're feely. They're emotional.
I don't know what that means.
Sometimes feely. She sounds bad. Right, I can admit that, but she also sings very emotionally.
Does she? Sounds like she's yawning.
She's cool.
It's like a really cool yawn.
Go ahead, Del.
Do you want me to have my opinion?
Yeah, man.
Go for
Spit
it.
Spit it out, dude.
So... She sounds like she wants to be a jazz singer. She has like all the elements, but none of the
ability.
Yeah. Well, she just doesn't like the thing that's interesting about that sort of singer is the precision of the cleanness of their notes and that they end up sounding like an instrument and the kind of the crazy jagged lines that they sing, you know? She starts to get towards it on Mr. Wrong a little bit. To me, that's the most interesting one. But beyond that, the music, I will say, I agree kind of with that Rolling Stone statement. Like, she's kind of just like a vehicle for the instrumental stuff going on behind her. But the production... style is everything I hate about the 80s. everything.
Which is to what?
The keyboard, bright, tiny, like not small, but tiny, like tines, sounding electric Rhodes bullshit. This is the reason the sax on this album is the reason people hate saxophone, because of the way the sax sounds on this album.
I like the saxophone.
Overproduced B movie, 80s movie soundtrack is what it sounds like.
Those movies needed soundtracks.
Yeah, I mean,
it's too good. It's like too clean and too good. You know what I'm saying? I mean, there's no edge to any of it.
Yeah.
It's too smooth.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and you can understand why they got to this point. And I mean, it reminds me of like how in the 90s.
Because they could.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, in the 90s, a lot of graphics were, you know, crazy. There was a lot of color, there was a lot of overproduced, like, you know, graphic art. And the reason was because they could, right? They're like, wow, look what computers have allowed us to do. We can go around here and play and do all this crazy stuff. Like the, you know, Gene and I were walking in a Finish Line or whatever, and I saw an old Toronto Raptors jersey, and there's a, you know, there's a Raptor on it. Mm-hmm. And it looks silly, but the reason they did it is because, again, they could. It was 1995. They're like, we could put a Raptor on a jersey. You know, before all we could do was put, you know, block letters that said Houston or Boston or, you know, whatever. That was like the extent of it. We could do all this crazy stuff. And then, you know, you're like,
so they have fun with it.
Yeah, and then you're like, you know, it doesn't always look good. And then a lot of graphic design returned to some of the more classic elements, you know? Like, you kind of like the simple. You like this other stuff. Same deal. If you listen to, like, the 1930s, 40s, you don't really get to hear Benny Goodman or some of those guys as well. It's, you know, like the sound sounds clipped. They just all got in a room, and they're like, here's our shitty mic. Ready, go! You know, and... now it was 1980 or whatever it was, 1982, 85. We're like, we can really get this stuff and clean it up and really record it.
Right.
And so they did. And I don't know if it sounds so good. And there's a lot of smarter people, more well-versed in the history of sound recording that could tell you how and why, little things like that. But, I mean, I can see your point.
Well,
I don't knock them for it, but I don't like it.
It strikes me, it's this recurring theme in this time period is a lot of bell type sounds,
yeah.
A lot of like percussive ringy sort of like high things. And I think there's an obsession with being able to get these clean highs, crystal clear highs that you couldn't get. Because you have now everything's electronic, it's all direct lines in. Yeah. So there's no speaker noise and nothing to account for to overcome. But there's nothing, but it takes all the warmth out of the sound. It takes all the life out of the sound. Same issue that people have, or the same reason people like vinyl is it brings a level of warmth and humanity to the sound, even through its imperfections. And I think that's it, man. But like even... like Steely Dan is a great band. They're good musicians. And I don't like Steely Dan because of the production value and production style.
What's
like I can't listen
Steely
to it.
Dan song?
I don't know.
I'll look it up.
Yeah, Are You Reeling in the Years?
And Deacon Blues.
Yeah, says Dell. All right, so back to Sade. I mean, I knew Smooth Operator. I knew Is It a Crime, because I think you played it a bunch of times, Gina. I don't know. Like, all these songs sound the same to me. A couple of them have a nice little instrumental version where you're like, I can kind of get down with this. But overall, it sounds muddy to me. Like,
muddy?
Nothing. It doesn't sound fun. It doesn't make me want to dance.
Like,
it
mundane?
It's lifeless. It's too even all the way across.
It doesn't make me want to dance. It doesn't grab my attention. Doesn't make me want to listen to it. Like, hey, there's music going on here. The kid was in here while I was listening to it and working. And only one part did she do a little wiggle. And then she kind of fell asleep. It was not even her nap time. I was like, see, it's happening to her. And she pointed to it. She was like, dancing, daddy. Put on some dancing. And I was like, you're not getting down with the get down right here?
No. I mean, it's fair. I sometimes, like I said, I can admit that sometimes she sounds bad. And especially I've heard her sing, I think, Is It a Crime on a live performance. And the way that she ends that song, if you guys remember, she kind of holds out the word crime.
Yeah.
And it's like borderline grating on the recorded version, but she does it a little differently and worse live. And I was like, oh, what happened there? But I don't know. Maybe I'm biased because I grew up listening to that stuff.
Yeah.
So it's got kind of a sweet spot with me, but
Fear is pretty cool. I like that song.
That great.
Wait, is that the one about the matador?
It starts with a bass solo. The blue.
Yeah, I mean, it's not bad. I don't hate it, but I think we're all in agreement that we don't love it. There's nothing here that says come back and jam out to this. But it, you know, maybe in a certain, the kid just came in here and protested to our podcasting by throwing her soccer ball in here and running away.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, sometimes I like music that is just kind of in the background. It's good elevator music. You know, it's good.
Yeah.
It's not going to bother you or distract you music. I was able to work because it was playing and I was not really listening to it. Yeah.
Well, there was that. Thanks for listening,
Sorry, Gina.
I mean, it's all right.
Not trying to hate on all your songs.
I can leave it in the private collection. It's fine.
Yeah.
I'm fine with it being there.
I liked Nelly Furtado a lot better than this.
Good.
Yeah, given the two, I would listen to that.
I mean, I knew I was not going to like this stuff. I knew it. I mean, like I said, it was not bad, though.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't hate it.
Oh, no, you hated it.
It has reminiscences of Enigma. Is that the name of that?
Yeah, a little bit.
Not quite as far.
All the songs sound the same. I don't know what's the difference between any of these songs. I couldn't tell you when a new one started. I was like, I looked up and I saw the title on Apple Music here. It's like Punch Drunk. I was like, what? We're already 7 songs into this thing? They were just their one really long song.
Her lyrics, the way she sings them on Tar Baby, sound pretty similar to Jezebel. I found myself singing those lyrics instead.
So there's Sade.
There's that.
How many albums does she have?
I don't even know.
Okay, you guys ready to pick?
She's a band.
Ready to pick the next one?
Yeah.
You guys ready?
Dude, have you warmed up your machine?
I know.
Yeah,
let me
get randomized. I gotta pull the lever.
Randomizer only is between 1 and 10. I didn't realize.
Actually, when I tested it out, it went to 12 at one of yours, but then we did it right now. Anyway, it's next time it's gonna be Metallica, the Black Album.
All right.
Yeah.
Who put that on the list?
Yeah, it was me.
Mm-hmm.
It's a dividing line, right, between
who and whom?
Metallica, and then We're Famous Now, Metallica.
Yeah. I thought you were gonna say between versions of rock fans.
Well, yeah, there's got
the 1991 and Metallica then, album.
Yes. It is their radio-friendly album. So then, I mean, we'll talk about it next time.
Not next time.
A month from now.
Oh, yes, people.
Not next episode, but the episode after. All right, let's get into some, like, real shit. You guys ready? You guys ready to do some regular podcasting?
Oh, you know when we're going to talk about it?
What?
Can you stop screen sharing?
What?
Valentine's Day week.
Ooh.
How romantic.
Perfect.
Don't tell me to stop screen sharing, Dell.
He doesn't want to see your crappy screen.
Don't.
My Friend of Misery. That's such a romantic song.
Yeah. I listened to that album, I think, when I was like 5 or something. Good times. good time.
Your night music.
There's a lot to talk about. Hey, you know what? Speaking, here's like a fun one. Did you see this video? This Smells Like Teen Spirit set to a major chord.
Yes.
What did you think of that?
I thought it sounded a lot like a pop song.
Yeah, that's funny.
Did you like it?
It was fun. It sounded like 90s pop music.
Yes.
It is interesting how changing it that little kid makes it sound.
It's so different.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think he wrote it the way he wrote it to make it sound weird. But I don't know. All of it's all pop music, right?
Mm-hmm.
Pop music.
What was I going to say?
Nothing.
I mean, there's lots of stuff to talk about. We could talk about, I don't know, cancer, child exploitation. We could talk about inequality. We can talk about...
What else you got?
I didn't read this one, where Dell posted a link about how he made a shed the top-rated restaurant on TripAdvisor.
That was pretty funny.
I didn't read that one, unfortunately. Crazy people, torturing their kids. I don't know. There's lots of stuff to talk about. The oil boom. What do you want to talk about, Del? I'll do it right now. Talk with you.
Let's see.
Inequality. How everybody thinks that they're poor. This article in the New Yorker where they're talking to like people with like two houses. They got a mansion. They got another mansion. They got a beach house. They're like, "Do you consider yourself rich?" And she's like, "No, no.
Right.
Somebody got in their private jet and went to Europe. That is rich. We're not rich. We're middle class." What?
Yeah.
I think if you have two houses, that's rich. Would you agree? Is that
your plan? I think
having a house is probably middle class.
I think owning your own house and having it paid for,
yeah,
is you're well off if you have if you own a house that you don't owe money on. If you don't have a mortgage,
I mean, because I think it's like what a house. Maybe an education, like, depending. Those are, like, the twin expenses, you know, because you could be talking $100,000, maybe $200,000 for an education, depending. $100,000 to $200,000 and up for a house. And then you got a car, which is, like, $20,000 to $30,000 to $50,000, depending on the kind of car. So those are, like, the three major expenses that people have that are not medical expenses, right? So I think if you've paid for one house or you have a house, that's anywhere from, like, say, $75,000 plus in value, right? In real asset. I would say that's, Dell said it's well off, but I would say you're at the very least middle class. Be lower middle
upper,
class up, paid off house.
I'd say upper middle class.
Say it again?
If you have a house, even if you're paying a mortgage and you have a cabin, like a hunting lodge or a beach house or something, you're fucking rich. You got money.
Yeah. I think that's a good point.
Namely because you have the damn time to go spend at a place like that. Like, really. Like, if you have time to go spend your life, your weekends, waking up at the crack of dawn somewhere else and hunting and drinking all day, you know, You're well to do.
Well to do. I mean, yeah, I guess that makes sense. This is from an article in the New Yorker, The Psychology of Inequality. And I think what was cool about this one is that it was highlighting how everybody knows what inequality is, even when you're a child. You know, they did, like, an experiment where they're like, here you go, kid, you get a cookie. They had, like, four kids, and they hand out cookies to all of them, but they randomly assigned an extra cookie to one of the kids. And all the kids are pissed. They're like, what the fuck? Like, why did they get an extra cookie, you know? And they did it to, like, monkeys, same thing. They gave them all, like, strawberries, and they gave one an extra. And it got the other monkeys pissed. And so then they were trying to give them, like, another strawberry, and they didn't want to take that. They're like, no. Because that fucking monkey got an extra one, and that's not cool, man. People really, they know. People, animals, we're all pretty pretty aware of inequality. And I mean, the whole thrust of this article is that, you know, if we kind of reduce the inequality gap, everybody feels a little bit better, a little bit more happy, you know, you don't feel like you're getting ripped off. Cause you know, you basically feel the same way as a kid who didn't get the extra cookie right now. You're like, what the fuck? And, you just can hide it better, I guess. I read that. Making the most of my New Yorker subscription. I'm reading a lot.
That's good. Thank you. I just don't... I hear that, though, man, and there's a part of me that's... Like, I understand that. There's another part of me that's like... of the mindset that that nobody deserves anything anyway. Like, really, like, none of us deserve any fucking thing. And just because somebody got... Some people are just randomly lucky and get more than others. Like, I still got a cookie, you know? Like, why should I begrudge the fact that somebody got two cookies? Which, that second cookie is going to make him fat and maybe give him cancer and all this other crap.
Sounds like maybe you're hoping for that.
No, I'm just saying, like...
I agree with you. I agree that, I mean, there's a lot of...
Be happy with what you got, man. Yeah.
I remember, I don't know, it was like 10, 12 years ago. I don't know what it was. Back when everybody was talking about, it's like when the Republicans are making a big old deal about the Federal Reserve. Like, that's not even part of the government. And there's, like, the whole Tea Party thing. My dad kind of almost got Tea Party-ish. And my dad was like, I mean, you know, he was kind of saying some of the same things. And I was like, so, Dad, are you saying that the rich people control the government and are, you know... getting their way? And he was like, yeah. And I was like, so you mean just like it was like in Egypt and in Britain and in France and every other country in the history of the world that we have recorded? I was like, you know, I guess sometimes you got to look around and be like, you know, at least I'm not out here building a pyramid. You know what I mean? Like, the way they're exploiting me is I get to, you know, watch some Netflix and sit in a relatively comfortable house with indoor plumbing. It ain't that bad. So I agree with you. But, you know, also that feeling of dissatisfaction, as we described, is, you know, kind of ingrained in you. You know what I mean? It's almost written on your soul.
Like, yeah.
You can feel it at, like, the earliest of ages. It's not something that you were taught. It's not like a cultural thing. Monkeys don't like it. You know what I mean?
I do think that there is an instinctual element to that that drives us to be better, to grow, too. Like, it's a driving factor for that as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other part, too, is that, like, we're all humans, and so we're part of a society here, and, I mean, that's what it is. You know, at the same time, you know, we're in a gilded cage. You know, we got it pretty good. There's a lot of inequality in the world, and we are the beneficiaries of a lot of good shit living here in America. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
We're handing out cookies instead of, you know, dust. So same kind of deal, right? We're over here like, I can't believe this chick with two houses is like, I'm not rich, I'm middle class. We're kind of doing the same thing, right? We have a lot. We have a lot, and we're like, oh, I can't believe we're not rich. When there's people, I was reading about, what is it? One of these mega cities in Pakistan where they got to, like, ration water. They got, like, 20 million people there, and they don't have enough water pumping. I mean, I can get all the water I want, you know? I waste a lot of water. I was brushing my teeth with the water faucet on, even though they told me not to.
I'm running water right now just because I can.
Just for the fun of it.
Fuck it, man. That's what I do to get my kicks around here. That's what we do in Laurels. We pour water down the drain.
It's like rolling coal.
Yeah.
I'm just rolling water, guys.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I was thinking about that. Both of those things. Like, man, it's really unequal around here, man. And at the same time, I was reading about that mega city, and I'm like, wow. It really is unequal out here, huh?
Yeah.
I didn't have.
It's not that bad.
Yeah, I didn't have quite the righteous anger to, you know. I was to kind of defend myself. Like, well, I mean, you know, there's not a whole lot we could do about it. And the other side, I'm like, take that other house, give it to the people. You know. Yeah. There you go. So you can kind of understand everybody's plight there. We could all do a little bit better. Maybe don't vote for the tax cut.
Well, the thing is that, like, it's all a fucking facade, you know? It's all the illusion of doing more. I do this amount of work, or my job is this important, therefore I should be paid this much more than other people, sort of thing. It goes back to that lie. But that wall is coming down. That facade is starting to crumble. And what happens when... I think robots are going to be able to do surgeons' jobs before they can do a waiter's job, you know, or a bartender's job on
maybe
some
it
level.
Just comes for everybody all at once, you know?
Maybe, but what happens when that facade comes down and we don't have that pretense of like, well, I worked this hard, my job is this important, therefore I should be paid that. And what happens when that's not the case anymore? What do we do with that? And that's what's interesting to me right now is we're staring over the precipice of that. Standing on the precipice, staring over the edge, whatever. Fuck you.
Yeah, I mean,
I mix metaphors if I want.
Yeah. Gina and I were talking about this before. I mean, there's nothing wrong with getting a little advantage, you know, but I think there's a lot of excess that needs to be kicked back into the system, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, going back to this example of this mega city with a lot of, there's actually more water being pumped, but there's a lot of inefficiencies in there. Like, it's not planned well. They don't have a good, like a tracking system. They don't know exactly how much water they need. You know, there's some corruption there. So it's not being like, you know, they have more water than is being pumped and distributed amongst people right now. It's not enough to cover all the shortfalls, but you know, they could be doing a lot better, right?
Mm-hmm.
Same kind of deal, a little bit differently. That we are not. There's nothing wrong with like a capitalist system, as long as you have like a referee. And we talked about this before, right? There are inefficiencies in a capitalist system. We can see all the time, right? Like, is a surgeon more valuable in a specific scenario than a waiter? Yes, right? When I need somebody to pull something out of my gut, I'm gonna need a surgeon, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, but are they more valuable, like, intrinsically, you know? Like, you know, are they a better human? No. And so a capitalist system doesn't capture that full value of a human, right? So you kind of need a government system to make sure that, you know, just because a surgeon can't just go around killing people. Why? Because we, you know, We deem that not okay. Just a purely capitalistic, what's the word, cynical system would be just like, well, surgeon's more valuable. Let them go around killing everybody until the price of a surgeon, you know, goes down. And then we'll just go ahead and, you know, have the football players just go maraud over everybody. It doesn't work that way, right? So what happens? Well, there's a little gap there. Like, we have to we pay the surgeons more money and they can buy stuff, and that's all good. Nobody really minds that. You know, they did a little bit more work or they have a specialized skill. Cool, let's reward them a little bit. But there's a little bit of extra captured value that then needs to get kicked back to everybody, right? I mean, you know, we pay them a little bit more water, but do they get a little bit more of everything? Do they get a more life, liberty, pursuit of happiness than everybody else? No, they shouldn't. You know, like, should they get the best water? Does their kid get the better education? I mean, no. You know what I mean? Like, it shouldn't be that way, but that's kind of what happens. And that's because we have a system that allows it to happen. They can exploit a lot of the other system because they're good at being a surgeon. And that's where we got to even that out a little bit, right? Just because you're, you know, you have the skills and time and place and you can capitalize on those timely skills doesn't mean you should capitalize on them for always, right?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I mean, you need a system that kind of says, "Great job! I hope you enjoyed your capitalizing on that. It's time to pass on the rest to everybody else, you know? Maybe you capture it for a time, kick it back into the system, reset the game, you know? And we talked about this before, right? Like a tree is in a perfect spot, and like a delta gets the best nutrients, gets nice and big and strong, big old tree, and eventually it dies. And it dies, and then all that gets kicked back to everybody else. When you have corporations that live on like zombies in perpetuity, that's not so great. We don't need a zombie tree. It's time to die. Kick it back into the system.
That's an interesting thing, concept. Like, what if we said a person's wealth is their wealth while they're alive, and once they die, it's not their kids' wealth. It goes back into the pool. That's how ancient Israel worked. Like, if you got control of a property because they couldn't afford to take care of it, and you like bought it from them or took it over or whatever, after some number of years, I think 7 years, maybe long, maybe it was a generation, but it would go back to the original owners, and you couldn't perpetually increase your wealth, basically, you know, for your family throughout time.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense. We've talked a little bit about it. Do you have any thoughts on this, Gina? Are you thinking about your kid trying to break in here?
I'm a little distracted. Somebody keeps peeking in.
All right. So, I mean, what do you think about inheritance, you know?
If it were mine, I'd take it.
And that's the thing, though, right? Like, people can have all these philosophical, moral arguments, but then when it comes down to it, no, hell no. That's my money. When my folks die, that money is mine, you know? I'm counting on it.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think there's nothing
Sorry,
wrong.
Gene, I didn't cut you off.
No, it's okay. I mean...
Okay. So
yeah,
like,
I mean, there's what's right and what sounds fair and what sounds best for all, and then there's what sounds best for me and convincing people to care about everyone over themselves or themselves, their family, is hard to do.
Do you think that it is? I obviously think this. I think that it's just like the abstractness of it. Like a tax is really like your portion, you know, as a citizen, to keep it all going. But when you don't actually see it go anywhere, it just sounds like somebody's taking your money, right? You know, like when you have to pay taxes, you're like, what the hell? Why are my taxes so high? I don't want to. Why do I owe $18,000 in taxes? You know, I'm looking at my tax, whatever it's like, your tax due. Like, why? Why is this? But it's your part of this larger thing, you know? I mean, I think do you think our issue is that it's not presented well? You know, like they say, yeah, your tax go to pay the national parks or this, that, and the other. Do you think
probably do a better job selling you on it?
Yeah, would it do you better if they printed out like a nice little graphic and you could see like where the budget goes to? All of it. A nice little pie chart for you. Yeah, would that help you? I mean,
If I believe, that's the problem, though, and that's the fundamental issue that I've had with government, is that I don't believe that the government can do things more efficiently than I could with my own money, putting it directly into what I believe in. You know what I'm saying?
But it's like, yeah, probably, but if everybody was doing that.
But the issue is people don't do it, right? People are not doing it. They use that as an excuse to keep their money.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, like people give money to causes, but it's not really at the same level and not at an efficient rate to keep certain things going. And I mean, you know, you can get to the whole externality, like public good thing. You know, like nobody's going to know if you said, you know what, you don't have to pay taxes, but you got to go volunteer at the park, right? You got to go pick up trash. Nobody's going to do that. Nobody's going to pick up trash at the park. You know, they put out trash cans at the park and people still throw their wrappers, you know, 2 feet away from it. They don't give a shit, right? Nobody's going to do the things that are required to fix it. And that's a problem. But I mean, I think that's part of the cost of doing it all. We wouldn't have any national parks if we didn't have a government funding these national parks. You know what I mean? Me knowing that that's the case, part of the trade-off is that there's going to be inefficiency, that there's going to be some graft, and that somebody's going to get a little extra fat cat job that they probably shouldn't have. But, I mean, I don't know. I think that's just all part of, you know, that's like the heat lost in, you know, in this transaction. In the changeover from money to park, somebody's going to get a little extra money. And that's fine as long as you keep it small.
Right.
Right. You don't.
I kind of agree with you at this point. Yeah. I like the way you keep cinching your robe up and like extending your boobs. Nice.
That's a little
strange. Your bust, you're just spilling out, man. It's like.
Yeah. That's how he squeezes out the ideas.
There's nothing else for me to do like here. It's the middle of the night. And
yeah, nobody wants to watch you do that. We can see
it
you.
And untying it. Tying it. And untying
it's on
it.
Video.
You're sexy, Adam. You don't have to throw your booze in our face.
I appreciate it.
No. Take it down a notch.
Appreciate it, guys. Give it an extra cinch. All right, what else is there to talk about? You know, this reminded me, this life hacking is really white privilege. It was, what is this on?
I need to read that article. It was interesting looking.
I did not read.
All right, so the idea is, this chick commenting on this other dude's, right? This guy, this other dude's article. He's like, yeah, so what I do is just, you know, bend the rules, right? Like, for example, I wanted to take my kid out to go play some ping pong. Well, we got there, and they were already using it. They rented it out for a private event. So we just walked in like we owned the place, you know, like just picked up a racket that nobody was using and started playing, right?
That was a life hack?
We got like, yeah, I mean, that was a whole day. It's a longer argument and part of her thing.
Taking advantage of the kindness of others. Life hack 101.
A little bit like that, but then she was saying, hey, you got to realize a lot of times these life hacks, these tips are really just, they're not really for everybody, right? And she explained it again. It's like, yeah, it works if you're a white dude, right? And she talks about how, you know, you can maybe change some things if you add, like, because I'm a man, right? Because nobody would do it. If you add because I'm a man and see if it works when somebody says all these things, or because I'm white, right? And she kind of gave some examples there. This guy goes in. Now, say it's like, you know, a black dude, right, goes in there, same kind of way. It was the place is being rented out by like a Bank of America manager's thing, right? Like, is that going to go over as well? Probably not, right? It's probably going to get escorted out. Why is that? Well, it's because you were a white dude. You know what I mean? Look like you're...
Might belong.
Yeah, and that's the problem. Like, why does it look... How come, like, just a generic black dude doesn't look like he belongs, right?
But that's not a... problems. But that's not a white privilege thing. That's a... Like, if a white dude walked into... If a black family... extended family had rented the whole place out and a white dude dressed in a suit and his son came in or not dressed in a suit, whatever, like people would be like, you know, like,
yeah. I mean,
just looking out of place.
I agree with you there. But it's just talking about little things like that. And the majority of life hacks and, this person talks about how like on lifehacker.com, they have that how I work. And they said they realize that they're always talking about managers or people that lead a team, and a lot of their life hacks are really just, you know,
specific to themselves.
Yeah, like it's really a life hack for a select few working on the labor of other people that don't have that option, right? And so you got to be mindful of that. They talk about how this one CEO is like, yeah, I just decided to take Mondays and Fridays off, spend more time with my family, go to the cabin, you know, doing all the things I like to do. And, you know, they say, well, all right, just you average person out there, see if you can do that, right? Just tell your boss that you're not going to work Fridays because you're going to go to the cabin or something.
You get some of that kind of advice from leaders in the corporate world. Like, you know, how do you balance work and life? You know, sometimes you just have to set limits. It's just what you have to do. You just have to. But it's like, yeah, if you're in a certain position, you're permitted to set limits. And in others, you take what they throw in your face, and you have to deal with it. You can't say no thanks or let's do that another day. You can't reschedule all the meetings to when it suits you because they're doing it to suit themselves already.
Yeah, it's like for the leadership started setting lunchtime meetings. It was not lunch for them. It was lunch for us. And so we had to work around it, right? Because leadership. Or how we got assigned a task. We're like, yeah, if we can get that as early as possible tomorrow. And I'm like, sure. As I'm leaving, it's 5 p.m. I'm like, I guess.
But that's when you got to push back.
Yeah, right.
Say, yeah, as early as possible is actually going to be tomorrow, end of the day. Now that you've given me one day to do this.
I think I tried managing up one time, and then I got told to not be so difficult. I was like, in this managing up, what you told me to do? That
didn't go over well either. This in your butt right now.
Turns out nobody likes...
you clench like that.
Yeah. so nobody likes that. Anyway, that was the point of this whole thing, is that a lot of these times, these easy hacks, they're not always so easy.
Not for everyone.
Yeah, not for everybody.
And you hit about
I would say they're definitely...
Have the definitely, menu do it, right? Like, what?
They're definitely not for hourly employee. Anybody that's on an hourly
line workers
schedule, it's not for them. Yeah, very least has to be somebody salaried, and even then,
even then
depends.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, like I remember working a job where you had to clock out and go use the restroom. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like they're like, "Are you use the restroom? You need to clock out. Sign out of your computer, mark in your time." And I was like, you know, this feels inhuman, you know? Like, can I just use the restroom? You gotta really mark me down, you know? Like, Adam, right. I noticed that you've, you know, like, it took you 3 minutes past 3 days. It took you 5 minutes today. Any reason for that? Like, I don't need that in my life.
Seven and a half cents, man. It's important.
Like, well, I had an extra cup of coffee this morning. I mean, but like, you know, I was fortunate enough to not have to work at that job any longer. Right? I was like, fuck this. But, you know, it very well could have been that I had to stay there. And it sucks for all the people that had to stay there and work that shift. That's terrible. That's that. I don't know, but I think there is something to that whole thing, like not following the rules, bending the rules a little bit, because I think you can fall into a trap of always following the rules, and so that you never change things, you don't realize there is a shortcut. Mm-hmm. So there's something to that, and I don't know. I like
or
thinking
speaking
that
up. Sometimes you just think it's not your place to. And then sometimes, like when I'll actually try, it goes fine. It goes over, and I'm like, "Huh, I should try that more often." Some people listen to me. They're like, "Oh yeah, we weren't even considering your time. We didn't realize it was your lunch. We'll move the meeting to some other time."
Yeah.
It's like sometimes people don't think to say anything because they think they just have to deal with it.
It kind of reminds me of this whole. Was it Michelle Williams that she was taking the rate scale? Like, if she was getting paid $80 a day, and what's his face, Mark Wahlberg, took the $1.5 million.
Oh yeah.
What did you make of that?
And then everybody peer pressured him into giving up money.
Yeah.
I thought that was wrong.
Yeah.
It wasn't his fault.
I'm like, why didn't they just peer pressure the company to pay her $1.5 million?
Yeah.
Let's all get $1.5 million. Why do I have to have $0 now? I didn't really like that either. But I thought, yeah, it's the same kind of deal. Is how much of that was her not saying I'd like 1.5? And, I mean, I don't know.
We're not knowing she could ask for it. Who knows?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's the other part is that, like, Mark Wahlberg didn't say, I want 1.5, but don't give her any money. He just said, I want $1.5 million.
And they said yes.
Yeah. I mean, he could maybe have said, you know, if you don't pay her the same amount, I won't do it. But, I mean, I don't know. There's some... He has, like, an obligation to just fight for his own well-being, right?
So as does she.
Adam Smith guiding hand shit, Del.
Yeah, but he's got automatically more opportunities because he's a dude.
I mean, there is that, too. I think maybe that was the way to do it, not let's take Mark Wahlberg's money and make them give it to charity instead of, because Michelle Williams still ends up with no money, right?
Yeah, she had no money. Didn't help
her. Right.
She doesn't benefit at all from this.
Just ends up making him look like a better dude.
Pay everybody the money. I think the people to really be angry about was her representation. Like maybe they had the same agent, so he should have known better. But I don't know that Mark Wahlberg should have known better. What the hell did you know? Whatever.
Yeah, like he wouldn't even know what she was getting, would he?
Yeah, I mean, unless he was like I said, unless he was saying, "Yeah, I want 1.5, but don't give her any, give her nothing." Right. Then I don't really see how he's the bad guy.
Nor do I.
There he is, Gina defending the patriarchy again.
Mm-hmm. I'm just saying, he's a man.
He's a man, he needs more.
Do his manly things.
You know how much shaving kits cost? A lot of money.
I don't, but I can only imagine it's a lot.
$1.5 million.
And I wouldn't even ask. I wouldn't dare.
It costs a lot of money to shave. When was the last time you shaved?
With a real razor?
What does that mean?
With a electric shaver.
I mean, yeah, whatever. Whatever you consider shaving.
Yesterday.
For what?
Trying
to be a smooth operator?
Try to keep the stubble under control here.
Adam, what about you?
Last time I
you
shaved.
You know what a razor is?
No. Last time I shaved my whole face, it's been, like, decades.
Last time... Oh, it hasn't been that long.
Like, my whole face?
Yeah.
Like, had no hair on my face.
Mm-hmm.
It's been decades.
No, it hasn't.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
No.
I was like,
you did it
one decade.
You did it for Halloween, maybe 5 years ago or something?
Right, so.
Deeply regretted it immediately after.
I can remember the last time I shaved completely clean was The Last Jedi when that came out and I went to see it.
2 years ago?
Shaved, completely shaven.
Why did you do that?
I don't know, man.
Did you like
it? I do know.
Do you feel like
I know
you look
why
weird
I did.
When you do that?
I felt like I shouldn't have done it. I felt like I should keep this and I decided I should keep... I don't like the full like goatee stuff, but just a little bit of a stubble thing I like. I've become accustomed to it.
What would Michelle Williams
do? I think it's better. I mean, you grow facial hair. I don't know why men choose to keep it completely bare.
Yeah.
I mean, it's your own face. Do what you want.
It's definitely not a thing.
I don't know why some people feel like you have to do that.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely not a thing anymore. But like in high school, my coach has made a shave. He goes, especially you Mexican guys.
They have that military like.
It's like, what? Oh, man, wow. It's not 1955, man. And even then.
And you're a racist.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you know the New York Yankees? It's part of your contract.
I've
if
heard
you
want
to play for the New York Yankees, you have to shave your face. It's still a thing. It's weird.
That's weird.
I wouldn't play for the Yankees.
I guess I'm going to
man.
Else.
No. But yeah, they have a shave policy. It's weird.
It is. Too much, people. Too much.
I can
We've already got uniforms.
Yeah, I can understand.
You know how we'll look like we're all on the same team? Uniform.
Yeah.
I plan on wearing it.
That guy has a beard. I don't know.
Who's he playing for?
He's playing for a third team.
He's playing for himself. It's not right.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Long hair, too. There's, like, a long hair policy, I think, too.
Yeah.
I don't know. I get the military thing.
I think that's where those come from. They bleed over into sports teams. And
like, I was in the military. Now everything has to be the military.
Yeah.
Like that.
That is what I know.
People just talk about, like, 0600, talk about military time.
Or they forget
the
what parts of it make people work as a unit, so they take all the parts.
Yeah.
It's probably that part that makes people cooperate. It's the part where you have to go shave.
Yeah, that's the part I didn't like about what is that movie with where they have like 8,000 kids?
The old movie?
Yeah.
Where they each come with their own kids
with Lucille Ball in it.
Yours, Mine, and Ours.
Yeah, that one. Because he's like, all right, A1. You know, like he always talks about it like he's in the military all the time.
Mm-hmm. Have you seen that movie, Del? Yours, Mine, and Ours with Lucille Ball. And I forget the guy playing opposite.
I think maybe, was it not? It's not Desi Arnaz?
It's not.
And guess again.
I don't know. Then I probably haven't seen it. But maybe. That is a familiar title to me.
It came out in 1968. And the guy's name is...
Henry Fonda.
Ah,
pretty famous. That guy.
Who is that?
Henry Fonda?
I know who it is.
Not...
He was in 12 Angry Men.
Facetiousness. I love 12 Angry Men.
Do you?
Yeah, that's a good movie.
What about 12? Nice guy. 12? Yeah, just...
No, who likes a nice guy, man?
Slightly irritated men.
I mean, I don't know. That's what's up there. This has been a very political podcast episode.
Man, have you ever heard people tell you stories about their experiences on serving on a jury?
No.
That's crazy.
Well, like maybe one or two, but nobody has a good one yet.
That doesn't sound like justice.
What are you talking about?
People are just... I was thinking about 12 Angry Men.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, that reminds me of people going on a tangent about their own experiences serving on jury duty and the various cases that they were there for and the way that people in the jury behaved and how they tried to convince one another, you know, to... We just want to get the hell out of here. And, like, people really are like that. And, or like, oh, you heard what he did. Like, just put him away, of course.
Right.
It's like, that's what you got.
Yeah.
And if you get put in jail, that's, you have to go to trial. That's what,
like,
you get.
A jury of your peers sounds great.
No, it doesn't. Yeah. My peers suck.
Yeah, until...
Can I get someone else?
Like, have you ever seen some of those? There was a whole Twitter thing a couple years back that I was laughing at where they're making fun of this. They're like, you know, like, a good portion of America thinks that the earth is flat. You know, a good portion of America thinks that there's, like, Bigfoot. A good portion of America thinks there's no global warming. You know, those are your peers.
I'll give you your Bigfoot.
Yeah, and those are your peers out there, and you know, a good, like,
on every continent they've seen him.
Like a Big Bang Theory was a popular show, right? Two and a Half Men was a popular show.
And now
we
all know that they're aliens.
I'm just saying they're out there.
Big hairy guy.
And so you have a guy that thought that show was funny, and he's trying to judge you on what made
Big Bang Theory is funny, man.
You're not on my jury.
Great.
Get off my jury.
There's Del. You know, Sheldon always says so.
I mean, the point was that
Bazinga
that if they had professional jurors, that those people could be paid off and manipulated and stuff.
Right.
And that was true, but I'm not sure that says true anymore. You know, especially in this day and age of. It seems like there's a lot more transparency about it's harder to hide things.
Right.
Maybe. I don't know, man.
Kind of. Until you get to, like, huge, like, upper-level corporate, like, massive sorts of things. Everyday people have a harder time hiding things, I think.
Well, that's not even the issue anymore. It's now that people are just real gullible. That's what, I guess they've always...
People have always been that gullible.
I mean, well...
They didn't have as many people daily... It wasn't as easy as it is now to find other like-minded people. You know, like before, you had to deal with the people around you. If they questioned the way you thought, you had to question the way you thought. Now, if people question the way you think, you can go on Facebook and find a group that thinks just like you do and bolsters those beliefs.
Yeah. Yeah, I get you. Yeah, I've been reading, you know, like I said, I was going to be following
two books a month.
One book.
How's that
a month.
Going?
I'm reading it.
Two books a week.
I'm reading it.
How many you got?
A book a day.
Did you know that the entrance? There's not.
You've read 17 books already.
The entrance test to the College of William and Mary
by midnight
in Thomas Jefferson's time was that you were making progress on your Latin and Greek. That was it.
Yeah, Adam thinks he has to learn Latin now.
No. I was just thinking.
You should learn Latin, man. You don't know Latin?
Yeah.
So maybe what kind of human being? William and Mary would never accept you, man.
Yeah, now they wouldn't, but maybe in, you know, 1703, as long as you're making due progress in your Latin and Greek.
It sounds like room for prejudice.
I mean, a lot of that stuff, I was just thinking about how, like, they were, like, Thomas Jefferson's class schedule was, you know, some guy would speak on the subjects of the day, like the natural philosophy, which we call science now, and in the morning, and then in the afternoon, they'd all sit around, drink wine, and talk about the material.
Yep.
And, you know, I'm like, that's not really the best way to communicate some of these things anymore.
Sounds like what we did when we would go to Sweetwater.
Yeah, go sit around on Thursdays
and talk about shit.
Dose talking about nothing exists until you look at it. Like, oh my god,
yeah, exactly. Exactly.
The table's not there. But I feel it.
There is no table. You make things with your eyes.
There's no universe for the blind. So it's y'all's fault that this episode was the way it was, because you started it off with your hate.
With Sade.
Just pure hate.
I mean, look, ladies and gentlemen, if you need to go to sleep, you put on a promise, right?
It'll get you to sleep, and you'll feel good about it.
I guess.
That's all I'm saying.
It's here, soothing. Man. It's soothing. It's not bad.
There you go. Your entire life is an illusion.
It's not bad. You're not. I don't hate you for.
I thought it was a good podcast tonight. I enjoyed our subject matter.
Like, we started out that way
because if we start talking about it now, then we'd go to sleep. And then we'd be recording for 7 hours.
It would be tough to talk about it right now.
Good stuff, guys. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been the Deranged Penguin Podcast. Thank you for listening.
You're welcome.
Bye.